Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Nathan, how many used cars have we bought?
TFO?
Yeah.
50 or 40?
Way too many.
Well, I mean, if you think about how many we buy per year, and we've been around for over 11 years now, yeah, I think we're close to 50.
Well, welcome to this episode of TFL Talk, and we have a packed show, Nathan, just a packed show, because we're going to talk about the top 10 used cars you should never, and that's with a capital N-E-V-E-R, buy, and we'll give you good reasons for that, but we've got more.
That's right. Recently, I had an opportunity to go out to Florida to a place called ECD in Kissimmee, Florida, which has a Land Rover Defender powered by a Tesla powertrain, and I'm going to tell you all about that.
I can't wait, Nathan. Also, Nathan, we're going to play a game. Our friend Rachel Alfonso just sent us this book. It's a kid's book.
Oh, look at that. What cars
What cars say? So you can look through there, and you could like have your young car lovers in your life learn to read, but more importantly, there's an audio file of different car exhaust notes, so I'm going to test you, Nathan.
All right.
I'm going to find out if you can actually tell what car exhaust note is what car.
Oh, man, I'm a little concerned about that, but yeah, I'm an old man. My ears are old, so you guys might do better than I am.
Here.
So I'll tell you what, when you do it, I'll give it a second to see if they can figure it out, then I'll try to answer it.
All right, we'll start with one right now, okay?
Okay, let's fire
it. This is one of three, okay?
All right.
This is either a Mini Cooper. I'll make this easy, okay?
Okay.
A Mustang GT500 or a Corvette?
Okay.
So Mini, Mustang. Actually, the Corvette and the Mustang are very similar. So
yeah, I was going to say.
Let's change it around. So let's go Mini, Mustang, or how about a Mercedes? No, let's do Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce looks like a Ghost.
Rolls-Royce Ghost it is. Okay, let's do it.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Uh-huh.
So one of the three, okay? I'm going to give you 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Okay. That's really easy. It's the Mustang GT3.
Very good. Yeah, you're one for one.
Yeah, that's easy.
All right. Well, we'll do these every time we do one of these top tens. We'll do another one, okay?
Okay.
All right. And then, of course, I'm going to do a Roman's rant in the middle of this top ten.
Here we go. So buckle up for that, folks. Before we get started, really quickly wanted to say thank you very much to our Patreon subscribers. Guys, thank you. Without your help, we wouldn't be here.
Yep, TFL, which is Patreon/TFL car. If you want to help support this show, please do so. And of course, if you're looking for all of our automotive news, views, and reviews, go to TFL-studios.com, where we put our stories, our podcasts, our TikToks, and of course, our videos all in one place for you. Make it easy. All right, let's get going with this list. Number 10 list, Nathan. Number 10. And, you know, Tommy made this list for us. So.
Yes, he did.
So thank you, Tommy, very much for doing this. He's not here because he's filming a classics video.
I thought he was getting a dragon tattoo on his back.
I hope he's not getting
Okay, so we had different intel. Okay, I totally had it wrong.
Well, should we spill the beans and tell him? Yeah, let's spill the beans. Tell him what he's filming. We bought an Excursion.
Yes, yeah, we have a Ford Excursion with a V10, baby. Oh, and it's going to be part of a pro. We can't give everything away.
Yeah, we
away.
Can talk about it.
You want to talk about it?
Okay, yeah, sure. You know what I hate? That's one of my rants where, you know, people like a lot of podcasts, they say I can't talk about it because it's embargoed or coming next week. I hate that. If you're going to bring it up, let's just spill the beans. So tell them what we're doing. We've done a series called No Payment Needed, right?
Right. We've done a couple series technically with No Payment Needed. In the first series we did was with 1,500 trucks, essentially, for $5,000. And then we moved to a much less expensive series of trucks for $2,500. This is very different.
We call that one for a few bucks less.
Right.
And now this next set of three vehicles that we're buying in the No Payment Needed series is going to be called Go Big.
Yeah, that's right. So we are going full size and then some with these SUVs. And the first one that we bought, and I'm sure you can guess what the other one's going to be at the very least. The first one we bought is the Ford Excursion. Not the Expedition. No. The Excursion. And for those of you out there who don't know what that is, essentially it is a heavy-duty 7 or 8 passenger, very large SUV that unfortunately was discontinued about 10 years ago.
Longer? Was it the first gen that we got? 2008 or 2009,
I think they got rid of it.
The one we have, a 2000 that we bought.
Yeah.
And that was discontinued. That one ended in 2004. I don't know if they did.
No, they kept on going. They kept on going for a little bit longer, I think. But the point is that basically a heavy-duty version of a SUV. And this one, now you could get them with a diesel, but this one has the big V10.
And the reason we didn't get the diesel is the cheapest one I find is $17,000. Diesels are highly sought after.
Yes.
I saw they go from anywhere from 17 to 27,000.
Yes, and that's in rough shape in some cases.
And our budget for three of these is, and we're not going to talk about the other two until we buy them.
Yeah, right.
It's 10,000. So what we want to do is basically Andre, Nathan, and myself are going to each get one of these, and then we're going to take it around the White Rim Trail and turn them into overlanding rigs.
Now, we're not going to do that after we go on the trail. We're going to do that before we do the trail. So hopefully they'll be ready to go. And we're very excited about this because it gives us an opportunity to drive some trucks that we haven't had a chance to really get our hands on that you guys have requested. So that is coming up in the future. We are beginning filming literally right now.
Yeah, and the hard part about it is, of course, you know, a $10,000 budget for each one of these. So you have to come in way under that budget because you have to have some money left over to actually convert it to an overlanding rig.
And maybe fix it.
So
they, that may sound like, oh, 10 grand. Yes, it is a lot of dough if you're getting like a Toyota Corolla. But if you're getting a really big truck, which are super hot right now, it's slim pickings,
so,
yes.
So can I tell you the story of this Excursion?
Yes, please.
One owner truck, and Tommy's doing a video on the Classics channel. Once again, TFL Deck Studios, if you want to see it. I was going to pick it up last week, but the owner calls me, right? And he's like, I've had a little issue. I was taking it to get smogged, emissions tested, which is great because he got it for us. That was one of the things I said I needed done because I didn't want to deal with that. With 170,000 miles on a truck, it can have issues.
Yeah, they might.
So he lives in Conifer. Nice guy, Jay. Thank you very much, Jay. And he lives in the mountains, and he said he was taking it down his driveway when all of a sudden, and this is a very steep driveway because I went there, the pedal went to the floor.
Oy.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's not good.
No.
On a big, I think this thing weighs like 6,500 pounds.
Yeah, they're really, really big. I mean, it's a heavy-duty frame. It's basically a heavy-duty truck.
I want to say it's the Excursion's the biggest SUV ever built. The longest and biggest, heaviest, everything.
I would say heaviest. Yeah. It's definitely one of the biggest, that's for sure.
Anyway, so he said... luckily, it stopped before it ran into his camper and went underneath. No brake fluid.
Oops.
So apparently he said one of it's got the metal brake lines. One of them rusted through. And
okay.
So he had that fixed.
Which is really cool that he had it fixed before we got it.
Yeah, before we got it. So the brakes do work on this bad boy. But it's a really cool truck, and I can't wait to actually, take it to Toby and find out everything that's wrong with it.
It's going to be expensive.
It's going to be expensive.
Look, we know that too, and it's but that's half the fun is that you guys get to discover with us whether or not we bought a turkey or perhaps something that's worthwhile. And in our last one, we actually loved the trucks that we bought so much that we still haven't sold or gotten rid of any of them, with the exception of the fact that I bought Tommy's Jeep. So that kind of tells you how we can fall in love with these things.
And there's a video on Classics with your reasoning for that.
Yes, indeed, there is.
All right, so let's get to it. Number 10, Nathan. I'll go through it, and you kind of give the color commentary, okay?
That's what I do.
Okay, so number 10, and I completely agree with this one. It's the Audi Allroad, built from 1999 to 2005, called the C5 generation. It had has the 2.7-liter twin-turbo V6. It has... issues with the transmission, and it has issues with air suspension. In other words, anything that can go wrong with this car will go wrong with this car.
Yes, and you know what the real shame is? I loved these cars.
Oh, I did too.
They were the coolest thing. Yeah. It was like a James Bond car. I mean, it had a suspension that was adjustable. It had a really good all-wheel drive, basically four-wheel drive system. You could get them with a manual transmission. That turbo was fast. There were so many things to love about them, but unfortunately, if you buy one of these, you're going to spend an awful lot of money maintaining it.
Yeah, you will be underwater immediately.
Oh, immediately.
Because the engine is guaranteed to implode. I think the head gaskets go on these things.
And turbo issues.
Yeah, the transmission is guaranteed to implode. And the air suspension will fail. So here's an interesting thing. I was working with Tommy on this list last night, and he thought that this should be number 10 on our list, and I agreed. And then I added a car that he did not. So this is going to be a bonus car. I'm going to give it to you right now.
Oh, you're going to give it to an – okay.
Now. Yeah, a Disco 2.
Really?
Yeah, a Land Rover Disco 2. And the reason I thought of that is because it is also guaranteed to have it's got the three amigos. So the ABS goes out, the air suspension fails on it, and the engine is guaranteed to lose the head gasket as well. So it is a complete and utter basket case. We've owned one. Our air suspension was replaced
yes.
for regular coil springs, which is nice.
That helped.
But we did have get the three amigos, the three little lights, or three little trouble lights that light up. Basically, the ABS goes out. It had the very first form of Land Rover's train management, and that takes a dump when the three amigos come out.
Right.
And then, of course, the head gasket had been replaced on ours, so that was also sorted. But that is another car that is becoming hugely popular. We sold ours. We bought it for like $5.5 million back in the day, sold it for something similar. And now they're on, bring a trailer for up to $15,000, $20,000 for clean ones. And there's no such thing as a clean one. They will all magnificently fail. Wonderful vehicles when they're working, but they will all take a dump on your carpet.
So a consumer tidbit of advice for you guys is that if you decide to go looking for one, see if they've actually done this maintenance in advance. So that way, at least you might have a decent vehicle for a little while. And by the way, off-road, they are savage. They are amazingly good. So there's an awful lot to like about them. And going back to the Audi Allroad, actually that thing could easily be one of the best all-road / all-wheel drive vehicles of its time, with the exception of reliability.
Yeah, and then on the Land Rover, Nathan, there is a workaround. If you want a Land Rover, if you love the brand like we do, and you want to use one, forget the Disco 1, forget the Disco 2. Tommy loves the Disco 1, loves the Disco 2. Go for the LR3, which is the next one.
Right.
Make sure you get the 2006, 2009, most reliable Land Rover probably ever built. It's got just incredible off-road. We took it around the White Rim Trail, and everybody fought for it because the air suspension, which will fail. All air suspension fails.
Yeah, eventually.
But it will not fail in a catastrophic way like the Disco 2. Let's talk about air suspension failures, right? So a couple things that can fail in air suspension. The cheapest is the little compressor. That's like a $500 replacement.
Or even the lines in some cases will blow.
The lines can blow. And then, of course, the airbags.
Yes.
Those are expensive.
Because the whole unit has to come out, I believe.
Yeah. And then with the Audi, what blows are the little seals. And then you got to replace the whole
system. Thing's got to come out. It's not some little component that's easily replaced in most cases. And you usually have to go to somebody who specializes in German cars or Audi. And both will be expensive. Let's move on, though, to what's pictured behind me. For those of you who cannot see, something I'm very familiar with, the first generation, and in this case, the 2011 Nissan Leaf.
Yeah, you own one of these.
No, well, I have a later one, and I'll explain that in a second. And I do understand exactly what's going on here. So let's talk about why it's number 9 on our list.
Yeah, so first year of the Leaf suffered from major battery degradation. The 24 kilowatt hour battery had little to no range when it was new. And when it gets old, it has less than little to no range. So I think the original range was like 60 miles.
A little bit more, but yeah.
But the problem happened when the new battery displayed 12 bars. Nissan would warranty it under 9 bars, but they're no longer in warranty, of course. And so what you end up with is a car that you may end up with, I don't know, what do you think, 25 miles of range if you're lucky?
Some of them can go a little bit over 30. Actually, there's a guy up in Canada who's been documenting it, and he says that he still can get over 40 kilometers, which, is not too bad. The problem is that the tech back then had to evolve, and it did evolve, and they started making better batteries progressively. So the newer the Nissan Leaf, essentially, the better the battery is going to be.
Yeah, the new ones, the Pluses, I think it's called, right?
Plus.
Those go up to 240 miles.
Right.
But they have one major flaw, and that is they're air-cooled.
They don't have a proper heat pump like some of the other ones.
Yeah, most like Tesla batteries, most electric car batteries are climate controlled. Batteries like you and me, Nathan, it likes to be between, 68 to 72 degrees. That's when it's happiest. That's when it's got its most life. If it gets cold, it loses range. And if it gets hot, It tends to degrade very quickly, and especially in places like Phoenix where people bought these, those batteries were shot. The warranty lasted up to 8 years, but a 2011 now is, of course, out of warranty.
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy one of these cars, the car itself is great.
Yeah, it's actually a really good car.
It's a good car. It's a really good car, but you will be underwater because the replacement cost of the battery is more than the value of the car.
Even used batteries on the base models can go well over $2,500 all the way to about $6,000 depending on what you're getting. However, if you go a few years newer, like the one I got, which is essentially the same body design as the one behind me, first generation. However, I wanted to get the bigger battery, which is the 30 kilowatt hour battery, which was available in 2016. And you could even get it on a base model, which is exactly what I did. Now that one, it's still big and fat in the warranty. It has so far survived outdoors in two Colorado winters and hasn't lost too much of its range. So it's already proving to be a good car. And here's the thing about it, Roman, that is a very big positive. That car is tough. My daughter has found every curb in southern Denver. She has bounced off trees. She got it stuck on a tree root once, on a root of a tree. She's knocked off all the hubcaps on it. She's managed to really beat it up, and it still comes back for more. The car has cost me $0 for maintenance, with the exception of me trying to get the air conditioner fixed, which is fine without it. Air conditioning system is kind of complicated on these cars. Long story there. Bottom line is that the newer the battery, the better the tech is, but it still is not regulated like these other high-end batteries in other vehicles like Tesla and Rivian.
Yeah, not air-cooled. Not climate-controlled, but air-cooled.
Not in the proper sense.
So yeah, just avoid that first 2011.
The first couple years, I would
bad,
say.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something that is an utter basket case, and I actually know somebody.
Move on, your turn.
We're going to do another one of these.
Another one of these. Okay. I'm going to make this. I'm going to give you a choice. You can see the little cars. Can you see them here?
Where are my glasses?
All right. That's what they look like. So I'm just going to go down. So Mini, Porsche 911, or Rolls Royce.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
Oops, I hit this. All right. Here we go. Mini, Porsche 911, or Rolls Royce. What car say?
Okay. Well, with that, that's probably. That's Mini because it costs a lot of money.
That's the Rolls Royce.
So it's ching for the.
Let me do the Mini. Let's see what the Mini sounds like. I'm curious. I haven't done these, so I'm learning about these.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like a Mini, a more modern Mini, actually.
You want to hear the Porsche?
Sure.
All right.
Hold on. Dude, I would have gotten this. The cha-ching is not fair.
I didn't expect that, dude.
Cha-ching. Crying out loud. Well, you know what? It would cost you a lot of cha-ching to buy a new battery for a Nissan Leaf or to fix an Audi all-road suspension. Well, so there you go.
There is a Pagani Huayra and a Bugatti Veyron here, or maybe it's a Chiron. I think it's a Chiron.
It's going to be really – okay, one's a 12.
Those should be ka-ching.
A bank robbery son, I guess.
All right, what's next, dude?
The Ford Focus/Fiesta automatic transmission. And, guys, this is the power shift, and this is a nightmare.
Yeah, they use the power shift, dry clutch packs, not wet. There's a class action lawsuit. Ford agreed to extend the warranty to 7 years. You know who had one of these? What's his name?
Chad.
Yeah, Chad had one of these.
Yeah, and he had a problem too.
Basically, if you have one of these Ford Focus or Fiesta automatic with the power shift, it's guaranteed to fail.
It is. It's something that a very close friend of mine who had a lease on this car, and it really died in a horrible way. And it's like the cliche. He was in the middle of the desert. He didn't have a signal on his phone, and the transmission completely locked up, and it was a complete and utter failure. And Ford has made the agreement, and they no longer build this transmission, by the way. This is gone. And the whole point of it initially was to make a simple transmission that was inexpensive, kind of along the lines of a CVT, but something that's sportier and very economical. And it was. It was all those things. And it was really, really unreliable.
Yeah. I mean, it's a black eye for Ford. I think they were early to the dual clutch. I don't know what happened. I don't want to speculate, but it just never worked. Some of these things would die, like the next vehicle on our list, and we can talk about that.
Yeah, might as well go right to it.
Yeah, so number seven is the Mini Cooper CVT, the R50 generation, which is the pre-2006 Mini Cooper, non-S, had a ZF CVT, and that was guaranteed to fail within the first 100,000 miles. They wouldn't make it 100,000.
Well, it wouldn't make it 100,000 miles. Yeah. It was a guaranteed failure. It was one of the few cars where you could say pretty much, you will have a transmission failure of some sort with this CVT. And this is the first generation of the new Mini. And unfortunately, they were horrible. And it's a real shame because the manual transmission version of it was actually pretty reliable and pretty robust. And I can tell you that because half the crew owns one right now.
And unlike the Ford, though, you could actually drive this thing potentially to like 90,000 miles before it would fail.
Maybe.
The Ford would fail within the first like 30,000
miles. Yeah, in most cases it would, even if you babied it. Unfortunately, both transmissions were really, really bad. And you must stay away from those if you find one that hasn't been recalled and repaired.
Class action lawsuit, again, just like the Ford. Mm-hmm. Mini issued a recall to replace a bad transmission, but this expired in 2014. And the replacement cost $4,595 on Mini Mania.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's even more expensive now. I think it's actually gone up in price because remember, you have to have this thing installed.
Yeah, Mini Mania is like it's a part supplier for Minis, but yeah, the vehicle is not worth $4,500.
Not even close. Yeah. No, it's just forget it, guys. Move on to something else. But don't move on to the Fiat 500L.
That's number six. Tommy put just a crappy car, new or used.
So my aunt-in-law, my wife's aunt, has one.
Okay, tell
so
me
what,
about it.
Real quickly, what happened was she was looking for a new car. This is right when it came out, and I gave her a list. And at the time, you know, Toyota Matrix, other stuff like that was sort of on that list still. And so she had a list of like 10 different cars, and I put it on the list because it was a new car that just recently came out that, you know, she found interesting. She's an artist, and so she thought that it looked really funky and unique, which it does. And it has a nice looking interior, which it does. And it has Fiat quality issues, which it does. And it has, like, it right now, she still owns it. She actually had the hood wrapped because the hood was rusting. She lives in Santa Monica.
Sure.
And so she had to have that wrapped just to hide that. It's still under warranty. She listened to me and got the extended warranty, thank God. And she's taking it in a little too often, honestly. So far, transmission has somehow managed, but there are some electronic gremlins in it. And this is just one example.
It didn't help the brand that they brought this in. I mean,
it was a bad idea, and they barely sold it.
Yeah, it was a bad idea. I think they were struggling for cars. And let's face it, the Fiata, the 124, is great, right?
It's a good car. I think the original 500 that they brought here.
Yeah, or is a wonderful car.
Yeah.
What other Fiat? And the little
X.
Yeah, the X is a fine car.
Yeah, the Fiat 500X.
Sister brother.
Actually, the Fiat 500X should have been introduced instead of the L.
Yeah.
It would have been a better seller, especially if they had a couple different versions of it. And unfortunately, the U.S. just never got enough Fiats and enough backup to make these vehicles viable. The original, the U.S. spec Fiat 500, even the Abarth, really good little car, not too bad with reliability, provided that you get the manual transmission and don't do anything too fancy.
All right, we're going to do another one of these.
Okay.
Right, this is I'm going to read what the book says as a shout out to the author who sent us this. Thank you very much. I am a Jeep Wrangler. You'll probably find me at the beach with my doors and roof off and a puppy in the seat. I'm a truck that that anyone can drive. People say that riding in me makes them feel alive. I'd agree with all that.
I would agree with all that. Or sometimes you find me on the roof at the bottom of a canyon when somebody doesn't heed the warnings on some switchback.
You can't read that to a 5-year-old.
That might explain why my kids are a little screwed up.
All right, here you go. So here's your choice.
Okay.
All right. Jeep Wrangler, Dodge Viper.
Okay.
Or Ferrari. And I apologize. I don't know my Ferraris. So I'm going to not tell you which one it is. It looks like one of the more modern ones. Okay, here you go.
Okay.
All right, here's the sound. I'll give you a hint. Sounds a little truck-like.
Yeah, that sounds like the Viper.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the Viper.
Yeah, because I can see the cover of the book from here, and that looks like an Enzo from...
Very good. So it is an Enzo.
Yeah, maybe it is. I'm not wearing my glasses.
Should I play the Enzo?
Sure.
Let's see what the Enzo sounds like. Did it have a flat-plane crank? Like a flat-plane crank?
Yeah, then when he revs... revving is where you can really tell.
Right, I got to listen to the Jeep.
Okay.
All right, yeah.
Yeah,
it sounds like Tommy's
Jeep.
Is it the 4-liter?
Yeah. It sounds like a modern one.
Yeah, you think it's a 3.6 Pentastar?
Yeah, which sounds the same on every single car that it's in, which is a million different cars.
All right, dude, you came back from Florida.
Yes.
Where you had a chance to get behind the wheel of a Tesla-powered Defender. Is that right?
That is correct.
So tell me about the company. Tell me about what they do. Just walk me through what happened.
So I was lucky enough to be invited. This is the second time I've been there.
Okay.
To ECD. ECD is East Coast Defender. They are an auto builder based in Kissimmee, Florida, so near Orlando.
Yep.
They're just about to open their brand new facility, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But they've been around since 2013. They've got about 50 people on their crew, and they turn out about 50-ish cars per year. Now, here's the cool part. What they do is they import, usually from England, a platform to a 25-year or older Land Rover Defender.
Okay.
And it's a variety of different types. It could be the 90, it could be the 110, 130, the 127, all these different
platforms.
So the
platform. Pickup truck.
Right, all that stuff.
All that, yeah.
Right. And these clients have them ship it in, and they strip it all the way down. So it's just the platform, and then they build it all the way up. That means new components throughout, and it's bespoke. So if Roman wanted, let's say, red and black interior, because he loves red and black, they would do that without a leather. If he wanted it from a Bentley, they'll put it in there. Not cheap. These things are extremely expensive. They start in the high ones, and usually go well into $250,000. However, every stitch you basically say, I want. Okay, so that's what they do. It's a bespoke coach builder, essentially. And one of the things they do, and one of the things I got to sample more often than not, which is awesome, is they take big V8s and they drop them in these things. So imagine an old Defender with...
Like a modern V8?
Oh, yeah, modern V8, a supercharged V8. I actually drove a Defender 90 that had a 650 horsepower V8 in it. It was doing wheelies pretty much.
Wow. And that, let's face it, it needed that because those things were slow from the factory.
Well, the cool thing is that's what these guys do. They'll actually put in a variety of different engines. I think right now they have 8 choices. So a bunch of V8s, they put in a diesel if you want, and a little 4-cylinder Cummins. They also have the original Rover engines, which of course they shrug and say, look, if you really want the original, we'll do it.
So they'll do the little, what is it, 2.4 Cummins? I always forget what the...
I think it's a 2.4 Cummins.
2.8. I'm sure somebody will correct me in the comments if I got it wrong.
Which is it's a really good powertrain, a very simple powertrain, and some people do it. And the thing is that they can build them up and make them into a big family hauler, and they're unique because, yeah, you could buy a G-Wagon for the same money, but not many people have these fully built-up ones. So, okay,
they're not cheap, right?
These are new. As I said, they go in the high ones. Essentially, you're going to be paying over $200,000 if you want one, and the one that I drove was well over $250,000.
Wow.
And the reason why is because rather than putting a big V8 in there or supercharged engine or anything else, they took a Land Rover Defender 130, is a beautiful blue one, and they put in a Tesla powertrain. So essentially 400 horsepower, and they say 220 miles range, and this thing is drivable, man. I jumped in it. I drove it around. I did not get a chance to go off-road with it because it's the middle of Florida. And yeah, other than dropping it in a swamp, there's
not a lot of off-roading in Kissimmee.
No, but there will be. And this is the thing. And this is a shout-out to ECD because they are pretty cool guys. Their new facility will have an off-road center on their property so their clients can go and test these things out. And so when they open... When they have this thing going, we will go back there and do a proper video where we're going off-road, which is what we do. And that'll be really cool. They expect to build about 10 of these per year. So it's going to make up nearly a quarter of the vehicles that they produce. And this vehicle worked. It was unusual, though. There were some unusual quirks about it, and I just want to quickly mention
those. Yeah, like what?
Okay. For one thing, currently they're only able to do level 1 and 2 charging. There's no fast charging available on this. Even though it's a Tesla battery, cannot hook up to a Tesla facility, so you can't do that.
Yeah, Tesla disables that.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't like you using, when a vehicle is either written off or, salvage title, they will not allow you then to charge it.
Right. And so the components that they got was actually, there's a company in England that does this.
I should say fast charger.
They're fast charging.
Supercharger, yeah. You can't
so you plug it in at home and you basically charge it up overnight. Now, according to them, they say 220 miles range. I'm thinking it's a little bit less than that, being that this vehicle weighs as much as a school bus.
How many kilowatt hours the battery was?
No, I don't have it written on me, but the thing is that there's a couple different options that you can put out there.
Did you do a story on it? Is it over?
It's over. If you go to tflcar.com, there's a full story on it, and that has the details and some of the...
Or TFL-Studios.
Or TFL-Studios, that's correct. So
you've got all the details there.
Right, right. And just to wrap up in terms of this vehicle and its capability and everything else, what they did was they took the electric motor from a Tesla and they hooked it directly to the drivetrain. So they went past the transmission. So it's one speed. And that means that you still have the four-wheel drive function of the original Land Rover. And they'll build it, if you want lockers, they'll put lockers, open diff,
so
they'll
did,
do open
did
diff.
Did they connect it to the transfer case?
Yes.
Okay.
Directly to it.
Okay, gotcha.
Directly to
so
it.
So they bypass the transmission and put it on the transfer
completely. Case. So okay. It's a one-speed, just like a Tesla.
Right.
And it drives a little unusual, but it will move really, really quick. And it's a little, it takes a little bit of time to get used to. Now, here's the weird part. They actually had to put in electric power steering, which they did a really good job on, by the way. And they had to have other types of pumps running electrically. So you can hear all that when you're driving, but you don't hear anything else. And because of that, it kind of sounds almost like driving a golf cart down the street or something. It's silent. You hear a little bit of a whine, and then you hear the pumps. And that's it. So fortunately, you have a killer sound system, which can take care of that. Overall, the vehicle is very drivable. But remember, it's a Land Rover Defender, which means it has the turning radius of the Missouri battleship.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
well, thank you, ECD, you said, right?
Yeah, ECD. And they really are great, guys. I do recommend looking at the TFLcar.com story.
Yeah, check it out. And ECD, thank you very much for letting Nathan go out there and experience an all-electric Land Rover. That's pretty badass.
It's pretty badass. And there are other
Land Rover-built ones.
Yeah. Well, here's – and one more thing. I did – as I said, I drove the Land Rover, their old – which was like a 1986 or whatever platform, but it's all brand new. And it had like an LT4 supercharged V8 in there. They used GM V8s, supercharged. 650 horsepower on a really short wheelbase. This thing will absolutely destroy anything I can think of that is currently built for off-roading.
So which one would you get if you won the lottery tomorrow, the electric one or the V8 one?
I would get a V8, but I wouldn't get that. That's just too much horsepower. I hate saying too much, but I, you know, on such a short platform, when you have 650 horsepower, it's too much. So I would take that vehicle, have it stretched out to the 110, or here's something, Roman. What if they built the Tesla version on a 127 platform, which is their pickup, one of their pickup truck platforms,
yep,
put the Tesla in it. That means they would beat Elon Musk to building an electric Tesla-powered pickup truck.
Yeah.
That just blew my own mind. Oh, Elon's going to be ticked when I mention that.
All right,
ECD.
All right, Nathan. I'm going to give you...
Give me another one, and then we'll go back to the list.
I'll give you a hard one this time, okay?
Yes.
All right, so let's go GTR.
Okay.
R8.
Okay.
Or NSX.
Ooh.
GTR, R8, Audi R8, or Acura NSX.
Okay, really important. Is it the old NSX or the new NSX?
It's the new NSX.
Okay. Okay, right, now I know what to listen to.
All right, here we go.
Oh, that sounds like an Audi. The GTR? Okay.
GTR, you were close. Do you want to hear the Audi?
Yeah.
All right, here's the Audi R8. It could have the 8 or the 10. We don't know. Right?
That's I bet you it's the 10.
It came with two engine choices. So
yeah,
we don't know
yeah.
which one.
And we've driven both, by the way. Old TFL videos. Man, that was a great car. That sounded, they, yeah, I could see how I screwed it up. Sorry, Nissan fans, I screwed up.
All right, let's keep going, dude. Number 5 on our list of top 10 used cars you should never buy. Jeep Compass, 2007 to 2011. First-gen Compass based on the old Dodge Caliber. Front-wheel or all-wheel drive, JETCO CVT, just a very uninspired, you know, kind of a car where they decided to use the Jeep brand and make a lot of money using the Jeep brand and not necessarily giving the car all the Jeep DNA.
Yeah, it didn't have the Jeep proper Jeep cachet, despite what certain people would say. And the thing about this vehicle that you should keep in mind is that the platform was actually co-developed with Hyundai and Mitsubishi. So it underpinned a ton of different vehicles, including the Dodge Caliber, which all of them were not very good.
Well, it underpinned a ton of rental vehicles.
There were a lot of rental fleets back in the, the JETCO CVT, as I'm sure you guys know, major disaster with that. Not very good, especially back then. They have improved them. But what Jeep did is that they went to the CVT. They realized it was a bad idea, and they eventually got out of it and went to a different transmission. So the later Compass and Patriot, they're basically the same vehicle underneath. Those were better. So the 2007 to 2011s, They did have a manual transmission one too, by the way, Roman. But still, the interior quality, a lot of that stuff was just terrible.
Talk about like your definition of hard, greasy plastics.
They had, you know, this is Daimler times and all that.
Mouse fur seats.
Yeah, they had a lot of issues, and they were trying to build a vehicle that people could enter the Jeep brand with, and that was the point of the Compass.
Basic. Remember those LED displays, right? You know what I mean? The little dot matrix.
It was
horrible. Speedometer, right? That would like the it looked like something you would buy at Target.
It was a very generic vehicle, and it did have later on, as I said, the bones got better, and they actually did improve them as much as they could, you know, to get a return on their investment. But the earlier ones are really dreadful, and I highly recommend that you put on your special hat and avoid them, despite the cachet you may have heard about in some old commercial, which is irrelevant.
Now, number four is another car that is, I think it's being discontinued this year, but it kind of falls in that same class as the Fiat 500L, and that is, of course, the Ford Eco, or do you say EcoSport?
They call it EcoSport, and this has been a – remember when that lady said it, and I was debating her when they came out from Ford, and I said – Echo is a repeating sound as opposed to Eco.
I don't think Ford themselves know, because half the people I talk to at Ford go Eco, the other half go Echo.
I know. So they're not on the same page about it. Now, for those of you who don't know, we're talking about a very small crossover, essentially the size of a Ford Fiesta, but built taller. When it initially was hinted to come here, they had a spare tire hanging off the back, kind of Jeep-like, and it looked kind of cool. I think it looks kind of cool, unfortunately. The bones underneath are just not great, and it was really built for a third world market, and they tried to make it better.
It's built in India.
Yeah, it was designed for
nothing
India.
Wrong with cars built in India.
No,
nothing
not
wrong
at
with
all.
Cars built in Mexico. We're not trying to like diss any cars like that, but you're right. I mean, it was a Ford needed to compete in that compact four-wheel drive segment, right?
Yeah, like with the Honda HR-V and whatnot.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, the Renegade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they needed something quick, and this car was available, and they decided to import it. But it just feels tinny, and it's expensive, dude. You think
that's my issue with
they're
it.
Like, they can get up to $26,000, $27,000.
Easily. And unfortunately, you are talking about a vehicle that isn't really competitive with the ones that it goes up against. They're just better vehicles. They sell them. They still sell, just not a lot. But it's just not as good as Ford can be, and especially when you see something like the Ford Bronco Sport,
you know,
which is only slightly bigger.
You know what a lot of Ford – yeah, it's a great
The
great
Ford Bronco Sport is awesome.
Yeah, like night and day, but you know what a lot of dealers do with them? They put them in their like temporary like loaner fleet.
Yes.
And then give them to you when you go and have your whatever serviced, and then they sell them as used vehicles. That's a very popular thing I've seen done with them. But yeah, they're you know, they're kind of starter cars, but there's just so many better starter cars in that same segment.
Yeah, I mean, and you have new ones coming out like the Toyota Corolla Cross, which is infinitely better than this. So keep in mind that this is just – it's just one of those that Ford kind of dropped the ball on, and now they have something better to replace it. So I would just look at a Bronco Sport. Don't even
bother. All right,
bother.
I'm going to do one more of these, and this is – I don't blame you for not getting this because I couldn't get this, but I'll do the three most expensive cars on here, okay? So we've got a McLaren, looks like probably a P1 or maybe a 570S. I'm not – once again, I don't know my McLarens.
Yeah, they're very different, though.
Very different. All right, well, forget the McLaren. Let's do the Lamborghini Huracan.
Okay.
Huracan versus Chiron versus Huayra.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like almost impossible.
Almost impossible, especially with it coming out of that little speaker.
All right, here we go. Okay, that's one.
That's a Bugatti.
Very good.
Yeah.
Bugatti Chiron. Yeah, you got that one. Yeah. All right, let's listen to the Huracan.
I actually said the wrong car, but he thought I said the right car. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, you said Huayra, did you? You want to hear the Huayra?
Yeah.
That's got a Mercedes engine.
Yeah, that's what I thought was hearing.
All right, and then here's the Huracan.
Actually, yeah, maybe it's.
You know, the problem with this is the speakers are so small.
That's my problem.
As a car person, it's hard to.
You did that Mustang, it was like, okay, that's pretty much a Mustang because I could hear it burble.
Yeah,
but these other ones.
Here's a Mustang again. Yeah, that's definitely a Mustang.
That is Mustang right there.
Yeah,
so that's how I was able to get that one. So, yeah, but the book itself is pretty cool. I wish my kid was younger so I could read it to him. At this point, he's stealing my books, and adult books are no good for little kids.
All right, number three, Nathan.
We know this one.
This is an interesting one. We actually drove it.
It was one of the earliest videos we did.
Yeah, Tesla Roadster, 2008 to 2012, based on the Lotus platform, of course. So Tesla took a Lotus vehicle and then customized it to an electric car. 2,450 built. They couldn't sell all of them. I think they sold like 1,800. One just sold on Bring a Trailer for $190,000. And originally they were, depending on which model, between $100,000 and $150,000. Very expensive, hard to maintain. Supercharge them on the current network because it uses a special charging plug. So this is before the Model S, before the X, before
the J1772 yeah. That was standard SAE. That would sell everything now.
So I know some people who've had these vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a hard one, right? Because Tesla is on fire right now. And so do you want to own the very first Tesla?
Well, that would be the collection purpose of it, right? So, yes, you could say, oh, I've got the very first thing that Elon made. Elon built a vehicle, if you want to give him the credit, which he doesn't quite deserve. The point is that this vehicle, which was built by others, is something that had a couple different transmissions in it because they at first weren't able to make it really work very well. I think they had a two-speed at first.
And then they went to one-speed, I believe.
Right, yeah. Right. And Roman and I drove one up and over. We were going
Estes Park.
We
went peak to peak to Estes Park.
Yeah,
and in the snow with summer tires.
Summer tires on it, and
we
both
were terrified.
Yeah, and both of us. I mean, our shoulders are rubbing against a lot of unnecessary man contact. The vehicle itself was quick. It was really, really fast.
Yeah.
But it was really rough around the edges, and it was just a step away from a kit car, as far as I was concerned, in terms of its overall quality, which, I mean, it's a Lotus to begin with, the Lotus Elise, basically. So, yeah, really the only reason that I would buy one is if I had a ridiculous amount of money and I wanted to say on record, well, this is the first vehicle that they produced.
Yeah, you know, the other issue with them is, and I'm learning this as we get deeper into electric cars. You know, we have that new channel, TFL EV. For the most part, electric car batteries have a very gradual decline in their power output, right?
Sure.
So it's usually, people have done studies. You know, Tesla's been around now, 12 years, something like that?
Something like
as
that,
long
yeah.
as we have, basically.
And it's usually, 2008, essentially.
Yeah, and it's usually like, it's about 1% to 2% a year in their ability to hold a charge, mm-hmm. which isn't a lot, right?
No.
And so it's this slow decline, and then you get to like year 8, and it just falls off a cliff. For some reason, you know, you only have so many charge and discharge cycles, mm-hmm. and at like 8 years old, and I don't know how many cycles that is, all of a sudden the power dramatically decreases, and so then you need to basically, the battery is still good at that point for like a Tesla Powerwall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something that doesn't need as much power as an electric car. So it still has life, but it no longer functions very well for an electric car. And so you get like 8 to 10 years of life out of them, and you know, these things are beyond 8 to 10 years old. And the other issue with them is parts. You know, they only built 2,500 of them. Where do you get parts? It's not like, you know, you're going to get parts for this thing. I went to our local Tesla service center, right, when we bought the Model Y, and I asked them, what do you do with these things when people take them in trade? And they said they actually take them and then they disassemble them and then use them for parts for others that are still out there, which makes sense.
It makes total sense, considering, you know, how much someone's willing to pay to keep their collector car going. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I honestly wouldn't, even if I had a ridiculous amount of money, I don't think I'd get one of these just because I know what it is. And it's an early experiment. Remember, Elon Musk actually had to approach the people who had put down the deposit of the vehicle and say, I need more money from you in order to actually produce this vehicle that you already paid for. And they said yes, and that's how he was able to produce it. And this vehicle did launch Tesla into the world's consciousness, either good or bad, because you call it, you know, Top Gear and whatnot, didn't really like it very much. But it did lead to the S, and the S was a hell of a success.
Yeah, Jalopnik has been doing this series, like people who paid way too much money for cars on Bring a Trailer. Recently, like an Integra Type R sold for over 100,000. I don't want to be like imprecise, but it was definitely over 100,000.
Yeah, it was over 100K.
And the numbers that people are now paying for these vehicles, and the same thing, of course, this car, like I said, 190,000 on Bring a Trailer. And I think to myself, Nathan, I could buy my dream fleet of 10 cars. Seriously, I could buy my dream fleet of 10 cars and have money left over as a down payment on like a summer house.
I could get 20 cars. Yeah. Down payment on summer shack.
I don't think let's say $100,000+ Integra R is going to make you any happier than like that $18,000 Golf R we just bought. It's not. It's just not.
I would agree with you, but the other side of it is, and there's a lot of collectors out there who are specifically looking for that car.
Well, it's also, they become commodities, right?
Right.
People are buying them no longer because they want to drive them or because they love cars, but they're seeing, like with watches, that these are investments and that they're tripling, quadrupling in price. Mm-hmm. And so now people are buying them not because they have a passion for cars, but because they have a passion for making money, which is fine.
And it's been like that for a long time if you look at some of the exotics out there. Yeah.
Yes. But from a car guy and gal standpoint of view, $190,000, 10 cars, all under $20,000, I could probably name them right now, and I'd be so much happier. And I'd still have money left over to fix them up, to maintain them, to store them, and to buy my summer house.
Right. And if you were a huge EV fan and you love Tesla, as many do, then it would make a little bit more sense. And then, you know, your argument's no longer, you know. Let's go on to the next one, though.
How about you buy the first Model S, which at some point might actually be just as collectible? Because that's really the first real car.
I actually know somebody with a very early Model S.
And those are actually probably, you know, more like in the, let's say, $30,000 range at this point.
You know, other than interior issues, he's had that thing for about 7 years or 6 years or something like that, and it's been dead reliable.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't had any real major problems, according to him. But he's also a bit of a cult fan when it comes to Elon Musk. So,
right, before you go to number two, can I do my Roman's rant?
Oh, Roman's rant time. Yeah, fire Roman's it up, guys. Buckle up.
I think you'll appreciate this.
Please.
So, as you know, we've had the Raptor 37. The newest Raptor, the third gen Raptor here at the office.
Right.
And the previous Raptor, Andre and I went on the program, and it had these Recaros that I could not stand. I just could not stand them. They were so tight that my big-ass American butt did not fit into them. They were miserable. Mm-hmm. The amount of like space there was nonsensical for me. I'm sure if you were Lewis Hamilton, you'd be happy in them, but I'm not Lewis Hamilton. And so this one also has Recaros. They're better. I can sit in them.
Oh, good.
But my rant is, why do manufacturers, and I'm talking to you, Honda, with a Type R, I'm even talking to you, Porsche, with your sports seats, why do they build these sports seats for like people like Lewis Hamilton's or Tommy's body type? You know what I'm saying? Like, for the longest time, women would complain that all of the beautiful dresses were built, were designed and sized for like a size 6 or maybe a size 0. Why, if in America, right, Tommy's not buying the Raptor. He's not. Right? His generation, millennials that weigh 120 pounds, aren't buying this.
No, they're
buying the Raptor are me and you.
Yeah.
Think about this. Why can't you design a Recaro that is wider, that actually fits somebody of mine and your stature and body type?
In other words,
does it have to be, you know, made for Lewis Hamilton?
Right, right. We need thickness, folks. You need to be able to support our girth and our thickness. Wow, that sounds horrible. So we actually know somebody who works at Recaro.
We do.
Yes, we really do.
Yeah, she's great.
She is great. But it's not just Recaro. There are other seat companies out there, and there are the automakers who use these seats. And the bottom line is, if you look at a cross section of Americans who go and buy your badass pickup trucks, and I'm talking about every single automaker out there, a majority of them are not going to be tiny little people. There are going to be a few of them who are pretty big, or maybe past 50 or even 60 years old as such, maybe let themselves go a little bit right here. And that means that we need more space. And I agree with Roman 100% on that.
Yeah, why not just build a wider Recaro that fits some, and not just Recaro, any sports seat.
Yeah,
I mean, they're all designed, let's face it, for Paul, our race car driver. He's like 5'4", and you know, has like 2 ounces of fat on him. That's
He's like 140 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, Type R, he fits into like a dream, right?
He's a former Stig, so he's, you know, and that's, you know, I know, I get it.
I was just in a race suit. I'm the Michelin man. You put me in a race suit, I am literally the Michelin man.
I'm the safe puff marshmallow man. So I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit even larger than that. But you know, this is an interesting thing, guys, because a lot of seats out there are becoming better. That they massage, they heat, they cool, they do all this. Yeah, they do that. But what about these sports seats that don't quite fit some of the girthier drivers out there? Think about that.
Yeah, look, like, I mean, like, you can make an argument that a Type R, right, Civic Type R, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, man.
You know, that's a young person's vehicle. And so you could probably guess that younger people are probably going to be not as wide in their stature as
me. And some of them are. Yeah.
But, you know, why would you then, you know, sell a $45,000 vehicle to people who can only, you know, afford to eat at McDonald's?
Which means suddenly become larger and need that seat anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of millennials who are billionaires, you know, crypto billionaires out there. But the most part, people who are buying Raptors and these very sport, even Porsches, these very sporty cars are going to be older. They're going to be, you know, bigger and wider. So stop designing. Just design the seat bigger. Make it bigger.
Make a little bit bigger. Yeah. And yes, still make it grip people. In fact, I know for a fact that for years now, automakers have been selling seats that can be adjusted, sports seats. So you can actually take certain components and bring them in and bring them out. Why not do that with these sports seats? So you have like a skinny mode and a not so skinny mode.
You know, I'll give you a car that was killed, not because of the seats, but because of this very same issue. Hmm. I remember when the last generation Viper came out, right? It only came out with a manual transmission.
Yes, which I loved.
Which we loved, yeah. But I'm thinking to myself, the guys who've got $120,000 to buy these things are not going to be 20-year-olds. They're going to be 60 and 70-year-olds. And let's face it, that transmission was very heavy.
Yeah, I loved it. But he's right. It was heavy. And the point you're getting at, of course, is that there are a lot of guys out there who really don't want to row their own gears. And when they're spending the money on this, they want to be seen in this car, but they really don't want to have to shift it. And that is what happened to Corvette and an awful lot of other vehicles. Where's the proof? Look at the majority of transmissions that are currently being put on every sports car that's made. Most of them are automatics of some sort, so you don't have to figure out how to be El Macho and actually shift them on your own.
All right, let's do one last one.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm going to put the only four cylinders. So there's an Acura Integra.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which.
I think it's an Integra.
Read those pages.
Here. Integra, what do you think?
No, that looks like a Honda, the European version of the SI.
Anyway, it's probably a four-cylinder.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever it is, it's a four-cylinder.
Okay.
It says, it doesn't tell you what it is. I wonder if there's is there a cheat thing in the back here?
Wow.
No, there is.
Okay. We're car experts, folks.
So, I don't know. Anyway, the other ones are easier. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make this easy. So I think that's the only four-cylinder I'm seeing in here.
Okay.
Then let's go with, let's see here. Let's see, what else should I pick? Oh, Hummer.
Okay. Now, is this, which Hummer is this? H2, H1?
It's an H2. I'll show you the Hummer.
Okay, because that's a big difference.
H2, I think it's an H2. Here.
Yeah, it looks like an H2. So, H2. Andre, so probably a 6-liter.
All right, so a Hummer H2. So that's going from, and then an Aston Martin. DB7, I believe.
DB7.
Okay, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Or something like a DB7. These pictures are a little...
They're made for kids.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. I'm going to hit the button. You tell me what this is.
Do it again.
All right, hold on.
It's definitely not a Honda.
It is a Honda. That's the four-cylinder.
That's the Honda?
Yeah, here's the Hummer. And here's the Aston.
Okay, so the Aston's the only one I would have gotten.
That's a little raspy.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. Otherwise, those other two, the four-cylinder...
Did I say girthy? Can you describe an exhaust as girthy? I think you can.
I've said girthy more than once, and I'm really worried that someone's going to listen to this and think I'm trying to be rude, and I'm really not trying to be. Out of all those, I totally blew that one. But it really, the Honda did sound a lot like a V8.
All right. Number two, Nathan.
Okay.
The BMW X5, the 4.4 liter, same with the Range Rover from 2002 to 2006. So the 4.4 liter has been very problematic, called the N62. They suffer major oil burning problems. When the valve stem seals fail, a coolant crossover pipe would leak, buried deep in the engine, 40-plus hours to replace. So what do you think? The original BMW X5 with the 4.4 liter V8. Not the straight six.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, the 4.4 liter V8, by the way, when it runs right, is an extraordinary engine.
Oh, it's incredible.
Not only that, but the Range Rover that has that BMW V8, they're highly sought after, but... Yep. You just read what Tommy put out there, and the fact is that they have been known to have some oil issues, and they have been known to have some other leakage issues. So not a cheap vehicle to replace, not a cheap engine to replace.
So I bought one of those first-generation X5s from my wife.
You had the six-cylinder, didn't you?
But I had the six. I think it was a three-liter, right? That was definitely a
three-liter. Yeah.
And I remember one of our headlights went out, and luckily I bought, like you did, the extended warranty.
Right.
It was CPO'd, actually. So CPO'd. The headlight itself to replace was $1,400.
Are you kidding me?
No, $1,400 for the headlight. And then... For some reason, I knew this, the little knob that turned on the radio also fell off.
Uh-huh.
And the head unit alone would have been like $1,000, which wasn't the CPO. By the way, the CPO did not cover the radio. It covered the headlight, but not the radio.
Yeah.
This is a BMW CPO.
Yes, and that's actually something I'm going through right now with our Mini, which is a very similar type of program. Certain components are covered and certain components are not. But when it comes to the BMW 4.4 liter V8, among other engines, BMWs, unfortunately, they're not known for being particularly robust over time. They're known for being problematic. And there are electronic gremlins and there are some quality issues that still haunt them.
And by the way, for all of you youngsters out there, CPO stands for Certified Pre-Owned. So these are vehicles like the one we bought, probably came off of a lease, and then mm-hmm. BMW does, and most manufacturers do this, like a inspection program.
100-point inspection.
Yeah, and then they extend the warranty, you know, another 50,000 miles, 2 years or something.
Right. So, and these programs are not all the same, by the way. CPO can be really, really good, and it's usually something I recommend before buying a new car. Or, in some cases, look at the fine print because they may not cover everything, just like the volume control knob.
All right, and number one, Nathan, on our list is the Volkswagen first-gen Touareg, mm-hmm. but the V10 diesel. One of our favorite cars, the V10 had over 500 pound-foot of torque, but, Nathan, very expensive to maintain.
Oh, yeah.
Engine was too big for this car. I agree. Too big.
It was too big to the point to where maintaining it and doing certain types of repairs required some crazy acrobatics to get it out.
A car starter is an engine out replacement. Holy cow.
You had to pull the engine out to replace the starter. What the hell?
And that, I think, is at least a $2,000 just to pull the engine.
Yeah.
If you can find a VW dealer that has the right, like, I think, if I recall right, you had to have special dealers that could actually work on these vehicles because they were so hard to work on.
Right.
And then, of course, dual batteries, so expensive to replace. We had the V8 Touareg. And the battery was under the passenger seat. It was not the battery, just to replace it, because you had to take the whole seat off, mm-hmm. was $200. Just the labor to get at the battery.
So over an hour's labor to pull off the seat, put the battery in there, and put
because
the seat
back on. Because it's powered, right? Whereas, yeah. You know, a regular battery to replace would take, 10 minutes,
Yeah, I mean, really, it wouldn't take long. So
turbo failures.
Yes.
And, of course, center drive shaft bearing would fail.
Did we have that problem?
No, but that was because this one had too much torque.
It was super torquey.
Yeah,
right.
So people love those vehicles. It's a, you know, it's a 10-cylinder V10, which is badass. Then next generation, and I got to drive this by accident in Europe, they went to a V8, which we never got. And then, of course, the generation after that.
You mean a V8 diesel?
Diesel, yeah. I'm talking diesels here. Very good. Thank you for reminding me. And then the next generation, they went to that V6, which was the emissions problematic one.
One of many VW powertrains that was a bit of an issue at the time. You actually drove the V8 diesel through Germany, right?
Yeah, I got to drive it. I got in it by accident and it blew my mind because I want to say that one had as much torque as a dually of the same generation.
Probably.
So it was like almost close to 800 pound-foot of torque out of a V8. It was just a monster, but we never got it, unfortunately. We only got the 3-liter, I think it was a 3-liter V6 diesel, and that became the Dieselgate one that eventually had to be so you can buy those are out there.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't bought back and it was repaired, basically, because they didn't use DEF fluid, right? Volkswagen came out with its black magic where they said that the engine would get so hot that it would burn off the...
Yeah, it would use heat to burn off the particulates.
Right, which it didn't.
It did, but not to the extent that they had
to make
measured,
it clean.
Right.
And so the fix on that one, it was also, you know, in the Audi and all the other versions of it, was to basically detune it.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. And there's still people out there who are huge fans of TDI powertrains, and they buy these detuned cars, and maybe they add a little this and a little that to bring them back to their old power numbers. So the thing about the number one VW Touareg V10 diesel is the fact that the amount of money it costs just to maintain this vehicle and to fix it is astronomical, which is why it's number one on this list.
Yeah, those cars, you know, for a long time, they were like, let's say a regular V. So there was a V6, a V8, and then the 10.
Yeah.
And first generation Touareg. And then for a long time, those were like $10,000 to $15,000 mm-hmm. cars. And I don't know if they've gone up or not. I haven't been following them.
Yeah, I avoid looking at them because the minute I find myself looking at a Touareg, I throw myself on the floor and scream because I loved the first generation. I thought the interior was one of the best interiors ever designed in a vehicle that was almost affordable. And then you find out, okay, there it's got all these problems. I don't want to go there, and I love it so much. They're great to drive.
So earlier you kind of said, and you did a video about it, that you bought Tommy's Jeep, Grand Cherokee. How's that been treating him?
Really good. Yeah. The only issue it's having right now is I've fixed just a couple minor things.
Right.
The heater is not great.
The heater core is starting to go.
Right. So I took it in for a flush, which is the first thing you should do when you think your heater core might be going, because it might just be a clog.
What year is it?
2001.
Okay.
Yeah. And I did take it in. I had it flushed. And actually, the heater is working a little tiny bit better, but it's still not blowing very hot air. The vents are working. The fan's working. It's just that it's probably going to need a heater core. And there is a cheat to get around that. And I may do it. But at this point, my daughter's just like, Dad, can you just buy something newer that actually has everything working? Because she's the one who's driving it to school.
Yep.
Because her Nissan Leaf, which we talked about, can't really get through the thick snow. We just had a couple snowstorms back-to-back here in Denver. As such, that vehicle in snow, fantastic. The four-wheel drive system, the part-time, is absolutely perfect. Tires on it, it's got the KM3s. They're a little bit more suited for off-roading.
Yeah, they are.
But my kid knows how to drive a heavy vehicle. She's driven trucks in snow before, so she did just fine. She says it's great. And the heated seat can actually cook your pelvis.
Yeah, the heated seat works. So
it really, at least on the butt.
The seats are good.
Oh, my God. So it's great. It's great. I'm thrilled. I'm a cheapskate. I like to buy old used vehicles, keep running as long as possible, so I'm not making big car payments, and then eventually save up and get myself something new, which I'm waiting about another year and a half to 2 years. As the market dies down, then I'll do it.
And before we end this, let's talk about the Easter Jeep Safari.
Yes, it's coming up.
Yeah, it's coming up. I can't believe it. Yeah, very soon. So are we going?
Yes, we are. We are going. We actually talked to Jeep briefly, and they are going to be doing it every year with one exception, when it was the first COVID year. We, TFL, goes to the Easter Jeep Safari. For those of you who don't know, that is an event that is combined for off-road enthusiasts during Easter, basically in April for the most part. And this year, just like all other years, Jeep will have some prototypes and some concept vehicles that we will be allowed to drive. That's the really cool part. And sometimes they're pretty awesome, and they indicate what they're thinking about, and sometimes what's going to be built in the future.
Yeah, we got an email from one of our viewers or listeners who has an AEV. Did you see that email?
No, I didn't see the
AEV. I'll forward it to you. Anyway, he wants us to take a ride, and he's going to be there the whole time. And I said, oh yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's obviously a Cummins. I think it's maybe not a Cummins. I don't know. It's definitely a Ram, you know, that they've converted. AEV has done.
AEV is known for massive, badass, brutal off-road conversions.
So I can't wait to actually get behind the wheel of that, hopefully, or at least feature it. And I can't wait to get to Moab. We're kind of in what I consider the deepest, darkest part of winter right now, right? Because it's been so cold and snowy. So that's always the greatest sign of spring when we start talking Eastern Jeep Safari.
Yeah, and so if you guys are curious, it is coming up in April, and pretty close to around Easter time, and we will probably have a Jeep week of some sort or something along those lines. And stay tuned. That's going to be on TFL Off-Road, maybe on TFL Truck, TFL Now, TFL Car probably. It's going to be everywhere.
See you guys next time. Ciao.
Cheers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.